Welcome back, everybody.
Oh, man.
Today's Rock Under Fire broadcast is brought to you by Flexible Fabric Bandages from Good Neighbor Pharmacy. That's right. That's Flexible Fabric Bandages.
Nice.
For all your wound needs.
I have some tea. I can throw some tea into the mix.
And Marlboro Light cigarettes.
So we're going to stay on our 80s theme. We're going to stay with 10 favorite pop songs. You so this is going to be cheesy as you want to be.
And this, all right, now this is going to be much different than our last episode with the albums, because these are just cheese. I'm not going to lie to you again, Mike. I got a lot going on. I did not do my homework on this, but I think that I can ramble off 10 cheesy pop songs from the 80s.
All right, wait. Let me just pull this back for a second. The criteria doesn't have to be cheese. I'm just saying that songs that you love that are from the radio. Like, not from our metal listening days, like
right,
stuff pop that was on MTV. I'm talking about pop radio. They're, you know, just good music, man. That even if it's cheesy, you can, it's okay. You can admit that you like it. This is a safe space, Pat. This is
a safe space. I don't give a fuck what anybody
this
thinks.
This is a
what
safe
like.
Space for people who like pop music.
I'm going to listen to what I listen to.
That's right, man. I have no guilty pleasures. If I like it, it's good. Should I start?
Sure.
All right. I'm going to start with Rapture by Blondie.
Great song.
Arguably, they say, well, it's the first rap hit. Not the first rap song. Not by any means the first rap song. But I was like 10 years old when it came out. Auto American. Pretty good album from Blondie. Tide Is High is also on that record. It's just a fun song, man. Until that day, at the age of 10, man. Growing up in the white suburbs of New Jersey, never heard anything like that before. You know, it was a fun song. To this day, it's always fun to hear. I don't turn it off if it comes on the radio or on Spotify or anywhere within 10 feet of me.
I wouldn't turn it off
within
either.
Earshot.
It is a good song. I like that haunting. That it's really just. It's a slick song. It's very well produced. I'm going to go with Run DMC, Rockbox.
Nice.
It's no secret that I'm a hip hop fan, and Run DMC were they played a pivotal role in me getting into hip hop like I did. My R&B background helped a lot as well, but man. You take me back to that. I was breakdancing. I was listening to hip hop and rap, and it was just a whole new day, man.
Well, for this next one, man, I'm going to get up and go get a tampon. It's a little on the softer side, man. It's a little soft, ballady, almost countryish side. The movie Urban Cowboy. Mm. When you have John Travolta. And Deborah Winger, they're married, and they kind of separate, and they kind of go their own ways, and they're both trying to make each other jealous, and they're down at Gilly's, and they each go off with somebody else, and John Travolta goes away with Madeline Smith, right? Madeline Smith has this like high rise over Houston, right, overlooking Houston, and John Travolta goes to the window, man, and you see like the city lights. Underneath the window, like looking over this, you know, this urban landscape under a bunch of like city lights at nighttime, man. And the most perfect music to accompany this scene, man, is Boz Scaggs' Look What You've Done to Me.
It's a good song.
So it's a love song, man.
It's a great song.
Always loved that song, man. It's just, I don't know why, man, because it's like this like sappy, sentimental, almost love scene, man, where like, you know, you're a 10-year-old, 11-year-old kid watching Urban Cowboy on cable for the first time in 1981. You shouldn't be into something like that. But I think it was the music that always grabbed me, yeah. You know, and just kind of remembering that scene. It was like always kind of like one of my favorite scenes from that movie because of the music, I think.
Yeah. And if you take the visual out of it, the music, the song still stands. It's a well-written song.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy with doing this list.
But I think the music goes great with the visual. It's like a marriage of sound and vision. You know,
well, there's people. Well, there's people well above our pay grade that get paid to do that. You know, it's crazy because during the quarantine, the drummer from Anthrax had some really good webisodes where he was playing different music with different musicians, and they were doing it much like we are with Zoom, mixing it down and then putting them out. And you got to see what Charlie Benante was really into musically. And it blows my mind how, especially the club scene in New Jersey in the day, how it's like, oh, you're this, you're that. There were so many fucking labels. You listen to this, you listen to that. Well, you're fucking right, I do. I'm honing my craft. That's what music is. So, you know, for Charlie Benante to show up at a fucking Taylor Swift show or something like that, you know, just for lack of a better musician, he that's somebody who we might not enjoy listening to, but she has her audience. She has a spot. She's a very talented songwriter. I know that through my daughter. She listens to it. So he sees her as, you know, as a musician and honing her craft. And that's what he's doing. And that's what I've always loved about musicians opening up and being honest about what they're listening to. Whereas you get labels thrown at you, if you're like, oh, you're listening to that. Yeah, damn right. I'm listening to it. And that's going to bring me to this song, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, from Tears for Fears. It's just radio gold. Everything on it, everything about it, visually in the video, it was fantastic. I just think it's an awesome pop song. It really just is.
There's a room where the light won't find you.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that song.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest. It's one of the greatest parts of that song too.
You know who really made me appreciate that song? And I wasn't a big fan of the song until Patti Smith remade it.
Oh, really?
And she really made me love that song. And then I went back and dug the Tears for Fears version. You know, so good one, man. Good one. Number 8, Modern Love, David Bowie.
Love that guitar riff, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great. That's a really great pick.
It's just a catchiest song that's not that commercial.
No.
It's not commercial in the sense that it's catchy, but it doesn't make you sick of it.
No, yeah, you know? Can listen to that. Yeah.
You know how there's catchy, there's good catchy, and there's bad catchy? And there's bad catchy in the sense that you just get sick of hearing something so many times. Modern Love, I never get sick of.
That's a good one. That's a good pop song that you would not get sick of. I agree with that statement.
All right. You're up.
Like, now I am on the spot here because I'm trying to think of everything from my childhood that I want to throw out there.
Oh, that's right. You're improvising.
I am going to
That's right. I'm thinking ahead of the curve, though, man.
Huh?
This will be fun, though.
It is. I'm thinking ahead of the curve.
Improvising. But you know what? Later on tonight, you can be like, fuck. You're going to be remembering stuff.
No. Hopefully not.
Addendum.
I'm going visually here again, like you did with Urban Cowboy, from a television show. And it's Miami Vice. And they're cruising. And the car, you know, hot women, cars, just boom, 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 boom. Air Tonight, In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins. The second you hear the song, it just throws you to them, you know, Crockett telling Tubbs that they're going to go fuck this guy up. And they're just sitting there, not even talking. And they're just driving. And that soundtrack is playing, man. And they're cruising down the road. And then it hits that drum. It's just amazing. It's amazing. It's not even that great of a song, but God damn, it's good for that.
That's the second of your songs that I've done karaoke to. Number 7 for me. This is not coincidence, or maybe it is coincidence, or maybe it's just the timing, man. You know, the 80s were kind of like this. People went from like the me decade of the 70s, what Tom Wolfe defined as the me decade, where the big vice was pornography. The vice in the 80s was people's obsession with the rich and famous, right? Yeah. Everybody got obsessed with the rich and famous, and everybody wanted a big piece of, like, they wanted to see their name in lights, man, you know? And I think of Irene Cara, man. I can catch the moon in my hand. I'm talking about Fame. Fame has always been one of my favorite songs to come out of the 80s, man. Way back, not even the move, not even the TV show, man. Way back as early as the first
film
run on the pop charts in the summer of 1980. So yeah, Fame, Irene Cara.
Time for my sappy one. Don't dream it's over.
Crowded House?
Huh?
Is that Crowded House?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow,
yeah.
I guessed it right.
Yeah. Nice. You got to remind me one time to tell you the story about that song. I don't want to tell it on air because it involves just way too much, but it's a pretty funny story.
That'll be like a Liberty story.
Yeah, at some point. It definitely will. Just brings back a very funny memory. And it's a very mellow song and just, you know, sappy or whatever it is, but it just takes me to a spot that just makes me laugh, man.
Okay.
And if my brother was sitting next to me, he would know exactly what I meant because he was with me. And there's not many times where my brother and I were in the same situations together, but this was one of them. And he would, if I brought the song up with him sitting next to me, he would just start chuckling.
Okay. I have a few songs like that. Yeah. You got to tell me about that, man. I'm gonna hold you to that. Oh, and really quick, the reason I talk about like coincidence and the timing with bringing Fame up is obviously because we lost Irene Cara a few days ago.
Yeah.
All right, so number six for me is going to be, we mentioned him earlier, Hall & Oates, Private Eyes. They're watching you.
Watching you.
They see your every move.
Love that song.
And that's the first of the next four songs. I just noticed this when I was putting this list together. It's not for any rhyme or reason, or it's just the way it happened. The next four songs, including Private Eyes, were all on the pop charts at the very same time, late 1981 into 1982. Right around this time, man. December.
Yeah, we're like 11 or 12.
Into 82, man. So December into January. These next four songs, beginning with Private Eyes, were out at the same exact time. So, all right, you're up.
Same era. I'm going to go with Abracadabra from the Steve Miller Band.
Nice.
Just totally not what the Steve Miller Band was doing.
Yeah.
At the time,
it was weird,
way out in left field, but it's a good song, man.
I remember thinking it was weird when it came out.
It sounds weird. It sounds like you shouldn't like it. It sounds like futuristic.
Yeah,
and it was like the dawning of that British invasion of weird keyboard driven nonsense.
The summer of 82 was like. All right, when Abracadabra comes out, Tron is the number one movie in the country, the original Tron, right? There's the Atari 2600 that every kid is playing with, man. You just got this computerized space age idea of what now the 80s are now being defined as, right? Because 1980 and even into 81 was a hangover of the 70s, right? Arguably the 80s don't become the 80s until like
probably 82. Yeah, you know? Fair.
Once the Atari 2600 becomes the staple in every living room and a handful of movies come out, and then you get this sound that didn't exist 2 years before, and you have Abracadabra come out. All right.
It's just everything about it. It's just like that, the wow, wow, like the lead, everything about it is just wacky.
Yeah, because you're used to like Fly Like an Eagle, Jet Airliner, and you know, Take the Money and Run, and just kind of like three chord, like guitar oriented. And then it's,
he went in a completely different label, different level.
My next one at number five is weird, man. This is kind of like it just kind of came out of nowhere, but then I really thought about it, man. And I can't reference this at all because I don't really care for much any of anything this band has done. I'm not a fan. I don't really care for their other songs, but I love this one song that they did. And I'm talking about Night Owls by the Little River Band.
Oh, Jesus. No thanks.
So I'll leave it at that.
That's me crashing into the telephone pole. Well, you know how to get me. You're over there on your little keyboard saying, I'm going to rile this fucker up.
Yep. And I don't know where the fuck it came from, because I think about like the other music that came from the Little River Band. And I'm like, nah. I don't dislike them, but it just never did anything for me, you know?
I'm going to go
it's
with
a great song, man.
I'm going to go with we brought this band up before. Without them, Thriller isn't made. Rosanna by Toto.
Okay.
Fucking love that song. He hits notes singing in that song that are just ungodly. There's that like that Rosanna. It's like, oh my god, how the fuck do you even hit
it's
that?
Got like
note?
A hot rod iron shoved up his ass.
Yeah, something like that. That's exactly. It must have been Quincy Jones is maybe jamming him with it. I'd love to. I got to look back and see who produced that record, because
I was just going
to
ask. I was like, did he like who produced that, man?
I don't know, because those guys were all pretty much producers in their own right. They were all brought in for the Thriller sessions.
Toto four,
I think it was, right? Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yes.
All right, man. While you're laughing at me, I'll throw in.
You're gonna laugh at my next one.
I'll throw
too,
in so. Number three, Young Turks.
I'm not gonna laugh at that. I will not laugh at that. That song's got a great story in it, man.
And that's the last of my. Oh wait. Where am I going with this? All right, that's really my number three. We're on number four, but I'll flip it. All right, so Young Turks is actually my number three, but we're on number four. I read the wrong song.
Oh, I thought we were ahead of. All right,
let me.
No, that song's got a great story in it.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. That's not a bad song at all. I'm not gonna laugh at you for that one.
Okay, so what would be next for you?
Oh, now I fucking forgot it, because now I got Young Turks in my brain.
Write
now
shit
that's
down.
I'm running it over.
Write it
my
on
head.
Your hand.
I should have written it down.
Punch it in your phone.
I definitely.
This is my list, man, dude. I just go on.
I got
notes.
It.
I just
Kaja
go
Gugu,
notes.
Kaja Gugu, Too Shy Shy. Yeah.
That was, as you can see, I don't know if you can see this, man, but it's one of my honorable mentions.
No shit.
Can you read that?
Yeah, I can. Absolutely.
It's my honorable mention.
Shot
in the Dark, like Magic, Too Shy, Something Going On, The Warrior, Cool Night. Those are my honorable mentions.
Cool Night, that's another good one. That's a really good song.
Paul Davis, Cool Night.
Yeah, yeah.
The song I was supposed to say for number four is Heart in My Heart by Quarterflash.
Good one.
Yeah, man. I love the opening of that, the sax. I love the way she sings it.
No, that Quarterflash was good.
I'm
man.
Like so distracted right now. I don't know why I'm distracted, but like I'm just
what,
I'm
what
just
distracted
here.
You?
I don't know, man.
He read one song out of order and he's all fucked up. Kaja Gugu got you all fucked up.
No, Heart in My Heart is always been one of my favorite songs. It's just like I love minor keys. I love moody minor stuff. Throw a saxophone in there, man. I'm a sucker for that stuff. Careless Whisper is another one, man. You know,
yeah,
I'm a sucker for that stuff, man.
You had a saxophone, you got me.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. We heard Riley and I heard Baker Street the other night. I don't remember when. We were just sitting around and listening to music. And it came. It was on the radio actually, and she had never heard it. And I was like, "Oh, check. Yeah, this is Mike's favorite. Like, this is one of his favorite.
It's
like,
probably my favorite song ever."
Yeah, and she's like, "Oh, wow, really?" And I was like, "Yeah, listen to the sax and this and this and that and the other thing." Then I showed her the Foo Fighters version of it. So it was a nice little history lesson for.
If we were doing the 70s, Baker Street would come at number one. But I mean, Baker Street is just like, you know, just really quick. I mean, it opens with a flute solo.
Yeah,
it opens with a flute solo, and then you have a landmark sax solo and a landmark fucking guitar solo. How many songs can boast of three?
Yeah,
famous soul, like just, you know what I mean? And that's not that's just the instrumental parts, man. you know? I hate when they cut that song down to 3.5 minutes, man. You got to play the full 6.5 minutes, you know? But anyway, my number two would be, did you give your last song?
No.
All right, so it's actually your turn, isn't it?
Yes, I'm trying to think of the name of the song though. These aren't in order of like
right. I know that. Yeah. I wish I could do it that way, but my fucking OCD won't allow me to.
If This Is It by Huey Lewis and the News.
That's how fucked up I am. If This Is It.
Yeah, by Huey Lewis and the News. I couldn't think of the name of the song. I'm singing it in my head as we're talking, and I'm mumbling the lyrics. But yeah, that the video of him walking on the beach just always makes me laugh. But no, that's a Huey Lewis had a string there of like some amazing fucking top 40 music, man. They got rich quick.
that album, I think If This Is It came out on 4. I don't know if it was out. I don't know if it was Sports or 4.
Or Sports or 4. I think it was 4. I want to say 4.
I think so too. But those two albums came out during the beginning of that 80s trend of record labels milking the new album for as many singles as it can get. So it had like 4 and 5 songs per album that were hits, you know, whereas in the 70s, it would be like 1 hit or 2 hits per record. And then the next album comes out. I saw him for free.
No shit.
2 years back, me and Stick went to see Huey Lewis at Coney Island. He played on the boardwalk.
Nice.
I just remember that.
He's got he's got hearing issues right now.
He's not doing too well. Yeah, he had to stop performing.
Yeah, he can't hear like some lower register stuff. But I read a really interesting story though that they're using like some technology to try and get some of that back, and if it goes well, I hope so, man.
He's just fun rock, man, you know, just my number 2 is Steppin' Out by Joe Jackson.
Great 80s song, bro. Just great.
It's my second favorite song ever, second only to Baker Street, man.
Such a good song.
It's my second favorite song of the 80s and my second favorite song ever.
I love the bass line in that song, man. Love the bass line in that song.
Yeah. And, you know, and what by that comment, I'll explain that comment when I get to number 1. But anyway, go ahead, man.
Two
more.
Every girl within a period of time in the 80s that I made out with I got to throw Faithfully up there, by Journey.
No place to start a family, man.
Every girl you were trying to get with and kiss and neck and maybe do some nasty things in the backseat of your friend's car, Faithfully was the one that was playing. It was that. That's what it was, man. We were two kids in the backseat of a Buick trying to fucking figure it out, Faithfully. No explanation needed.
Not me.
That's probably the corniest song of the whole list.
Is that Rival Night Owls?
Fair enough.
I don't think Night Owls is that bad, man. I mean, look, I could say It's Raining Again from Supertramp.
What the hell did I say? Something came on. And I was like, I hated something that came on. And I was driving with Riley and I was like, oh, fucking, she goes, you don't like these guys? I don't remember who it was. I wish I did. I was like, this is the fucking band that you hear in the elevator of the Supertramp building. And she started dying.
Oh man. Pablo Cruz.
Yeah.
Pablo Cruz.
I wish I remember what it was.
When she said goodbye.
No.
What you gonna do when she's gone?
It was something on Q104 because it was over Thanksgiving weekend and they're doing that 1,043 songs of all time. So they were up like the 500s or something like that. And I don't, I wish I could remember.
We'll be done next Thursday.
Yeah.
Oh shit. Oh man. So my number one, this is, and the funny thing is, this is so weird because it's not my favorite song ever, you know, even though it's number one over Stepping Out, and Stepping Out is my second favorite song ever. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So there's different criteria for this list, man. So this is strictly an 80s list. And in terms of lyrics and theme and fun and drama and emotion and teen angst and rebellion and the right production, even if some of it is trendy, and the subtlety of being catchy and not being repetitive to the point where you want to strangle the artist and never hear the song again, is catchy as fuck. And it has all of the right ingredients, man. If that's my criteria, I've got to go with Love is a Battlefield by Pat Benatar. That is, I think, the perfect pop song of the 1980s, man. And there are a lot of them. I thought long and hard about this because this wasn't even on my list. And I love this song so much that I heard it just like a few months ago, man. And it dawned on me how much I love the fucking song, you know? And I was like, wow, this really is the best song of the 80s, in my opinion. like when I heard it, there was like that flashing, you know, the light goes on, that moment you have of clarity and of like, whoa, like realization of something, right? And I had one of those moments, man, with that song. Where I was like, this has to go at the top of that list.
If I was grading it, I would go a different song from your list. I like Private Eyes as like my song of the 80s. I think
I could easily see that, man.
I think that had a lot, yeah. That had a lot of everything in it for me. My last song has got a hook that will not leave your head. It's just stuck there. It is repetitive though, but it's a duet.
It's not Mexican radio, is it?
No, it's definitely not Mexican radio. It's a duet that you wouldn't have expected. It's Easy Lover by Phil Collins and
Bailey.
And I can't think of his name.
Philip Bailey.
Philip Bailey, thank you. Yeah. I don't know, man. Philip Bailey's voice is just so fucking tremendous on that. Because Phil Collins' voice is high. And Philip Bailey is like, here, hold my fucking beer. And then he goes up a whole other octave.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, man. I totally dig that song. I can remember a time when my cousin and I were cleaning out his room. And we were like redoing shit, hanging posters and this and that. And for some reason, that song came on the radio. And we like fucking blasted it. And his dad, he was not real my real uncle. It was like his my aunt remarried, and he comes upstairs and is like, "What the fuck?" It was so loud. He was like, "What are you fucking doing in here?" And he thought we were smoking weed for sure. Wish we weren't. We were just being fucking teenagers.
Yeah, that's a good one, man.
Yeah, it's a fun song.
Yeah, it was, man.
So now people know the inner workings of our minds.
what was going on
in the 80s.
This was a show that I wanted to do for like months back. So when I was thinking about, like, I heard that song, the Pat Benatar song, probably because they were putting her in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
When they first announced it for her. And then I heard it and I was like, you know, I got that show coming up. We'll probably get to it like some point in the next few months when we do it. And I just made a note. I was like, that's got to be on that list, you know? And then again, I heard the song again. I was like, I've always loved this song, man, but I just never realized how much, you know? And it's like, I'll save that thought. I won't go there.
Speaking of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, not really them in particular, but HBO Max always carries the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
This is unprecedented. They played the Howard Stern interview with Bruce Springsteen on HBO Max.
Yeah, it's there. A few nights ago.
Yeah, it's there now. I watched it yesterday.
I saw it Sunday night.
It's really good. Nothing that we really, didn't blow us away by, nothing that we didn't know.
Right.
Really. But the live music that he played was great. And I also liked how Howard kind of like had to, he apologized, first of all. And
what was he apologizing for, man?
Oh, he
just
used
like
to
past
bash.
Stuff. Back
oh
in
yeah,
the day?
He used to bash Bruce and Patty both, and that's why Bruce said Patty is a Sicilian and has a longer memory.
Right.
And but Howard was just very humbled.
Yeah.
And even explained that he's changed and was very thankful at the end of the interview. It was a totally different Howard interview than I've ever seen. Howard has taken on right now people who used to listen to him religiously just hating him because he has changed. He's moved. He's grown as a person, as an interviewer. And that's why he's getting these bigger interviews. He doesn't have a room full of blondes with their tits out slapping themselves with sausages anymore. He's grown.
Yes.
So he has a camp now that
I agree.
Diehards that utterly hate him now.
For two reasons, I think. One is because he changed.
Yes.
Right. And there is a certain.
You can
people
say
that
it.
Don't like change.
Yeah.
Right.
You can say it. I know where you're going.
And politics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if he was out there supporting Trump, they'd still be singing his praises.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line, man.
And some of those people have ideas that don't really jive up to where he is. And, the cream always rises to the top, if you will. And you changed.
Why did you change?
Yeah.
It's just what they were talking about. What Bruce was saying.
Bruce exactly said that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Exactly, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know if you had seen it. It was really just, I thought it was.
Yeah.
Really
there was
good.
There was no way I wasn't going to watch that because look, I grew up with Howard as you did.
Yeah.
And I grew up with Bruce, man. And these are two of my childhood heroes, man.
Yeah. Icons. Yeah.
And icons. Yeah. Not heroes, but icons, man. And so, yeah, you have to watch that, man.
Yeah.
I just feel sorry for all the people that now have to boycott Howard because he had Bruce on. That piece of shit, Bruce.
He also got to interview, through his change, he's also got to interview Madonna, Lady Gaga.
And Neil Young, such a great, whenever he's had Neil on twice, man.
Paul McCartney.
The Billy Joel interview.
Billy Joel. He's, people aren't as afraid of him anymore. He's going to ask good questions.
He's respectable now. He's become part of the establishment.
Yeah.
And it's like Ian Hill of all fucking people, man. what I watched the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Ian Hill.
It's on my list.
Man, the bass player of Judas Priest, man, the guy in the background.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The guy that never says a word. He's like out there, he's talking about how you're railing against the establishment and you're trying to make a point and you're getting all rebellious and this and that. And then you become the establishment. And as I and then they cut to Bruce Springsteen and Bruce Springsteen's laughing. And that was so fucking surreal for me to see that.
Wow.
Bruce Springsteen watching Ian Hill, man. Like my favorite band in the 80s was Judas Priest. My favorite artist in the 80s was Bruce Springsteen.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And Ian Hill is just like, he's just like, he's like the mascot. He's just, and seeing him up front, man. Because now he's up front more because him and Rob are like two of the only really original members.
Yeah.
And so he does more interviews these days.
Who inducted them?
Alice Cooper.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I didn't know that until it happened. I had no clue who was inducting them.
Hmm.
But it was just so weird watching, seeing Bruce in the audience watching Judas Priest. just as a fan of both. It's just like a weird thing for me,
He talked about that in the interview, though. His craft and with his daughter, picking his daughter up. And she was listening to the Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
So Did they show? I know I saw snippets of it online, but Dolly Parton doing Jolene and Rob was singing that with her. Was that, did that make the cut to the TV part
they
of it?
They did, man, but they make too much of that because they, the way like Blabbermouth and those metal magazines, the way they make it seem is that Rob Halford went out there and did a duet with Dolly Parton, which is not the case. There were 20 people on the stage.
Right.
They were all standing in a line. And there was like maybe 15 seconds where Rob went up to Dolly and they kind of got together and shared a microphone for like maybe 10 to 15 seconds. But there were like 20 other people standing in a line all singing the same song. So
yeah, like the end of the made night
jam. Yeah, and they kind of made it look like it was just them two.
Got you.
Which it wasn't.
No, yeah.
Yeah. But even that was kind of surreal to watch, you know?
It's on my list. I'll check it out.
Yeah. But anyway, all right, cool. I think we're good, man.
And that's another one in the can.
That's a wrap.